Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's All Sides Weekend. That was the dance of the March of the Siamese Children from Rodgers and Hammerstein's The King and I. Quite fitting for us to have on air today because we're going to be talking about the new season of the Performing Arts in Columbus, which is getting underway. Sometimes I think the Columbus Symphony's big classical opening night is the official kickoff, which is tonight, but there's a lot else going on as well. Lisa Minkin is here, producer of Broadway in Columbus, and The King and I is only one of many shows Lisa and her colleagues are bringing to Columbus in the coming year. Peggy Creadai, the artistic director, my opera girlfriend of Opera Columbus. She is the one who decides what operas are going to be performed here and who's going to be performing them. And she is batting a thousand, I'll tell you. And she is looking forward to a new production of Benjamin Britten's very creepy The Turn of the Screw, creepy, which we'll talk about. And making a debut with us today, Daniel Walshaw, the artistic administrator of the Columbus Symphony, who is here to tell us about everything that's going on in the Columbus, in the Ohio Theater and the Southern Theater with our Symphony Orchestra. And I'd like to say very often at the Columbus Symphony, if you walk into the Ohio Theater and you see about 100 people on stage, most of them are your neighbors. And I think it's important to really keep that point going on. But Lisa Minkin, I want to catch us up with Broadway in Columbus and The King and I and the School of Rock, which is coming up soon, right?
Yes, based on the movie. And actually, it was written by Andrew Lloyd Webber, and the creator of Downton Abbey actually wrote the book for the show. Huh. So a cool combination of folks. And one really cool thing about this show, the kids that you see on stage, they are really playing those instruments. They are a genuine rock band.
Is this the one with Jack Black was in the movie?
Exactly.
You know, they wanted me for that. I couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. I think I did hear that.
Booked in radio, yes.
Everybody knows that.
The School of Rock, but that's a great show. That was a lot of fun as a movie, so it should be a great show. It was a big ticket in New York.
Big ticket in New York. High energy. Great to bring the family to, especially if you're trying to inspire the young musicians in your life.
Also, now, you told me as we were going on air, sotto voce, about Waitress, which is running on Broadway now.
That's correct.
Which is a big ticket, but mm-hmm. There's a kind of a, not a gimmick, but there's something very interesting for Columbus audiences.
Yeah, we're going to have a great local tie-in at the very end of the show. There's a character, Lulu, a 4 to 5 year old girl, and we are holding local Columbus auditions for that role. We're going to cast 2 little girls to be on the stage in November in that role. So you can sign up today at auditions. You can find out more information at kappa.com/waitress auditions.
Now, Lisa, when you decide who is coming, what programs, what shows are coming to town, what do you have to consider? Do you kind of go around the country shopping for shows that you think would do well here?
Well, there's a whole team of us that work on this. We most oftentimes go to New York to see shows, to see what we think would be a great fit for the Columbus audiences. We also have great partners in New York that are advising us and helping us get the hottest shows on Broadway to Columbus just as soon as possible.
Tell me favorites. What are you really looking forward to? Because Phantom of the Opera is coming back.
Phantom is coming back. That's definitely a crowd pleaser, a lavish production, and fun to see in the Ohio Theater. I'm also pretty excited about seeing Chicago, which has an OSU alum in the show.
Tell me.
Eddie George.
Eddie George is going to do the Richard Gere role in Chicago. He's going
That's right. Lawyer Billy Flynn.
That's right. He's give me the old razzle. Right. Yes.
Exactly.
So how did you guys get him involved? I mean, has he been doing it on the road in other venues?
He's been doing it in a few select markets, so we were definitely happy to get him here in Columbus. But I believe it was February of 2016 actually made its Broadway debut in this role.
So Eddie George is going to be singing and dancing, and they always wear very dapper suits in Chicago.
Yes.
The women don't wear much. I don't mean to be sexist, but
helps sells it.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough. I saw Cheetah Rivera and Gwen Verdon do it in the 70s, and it was a great show then. Mm-hmm. There is a song in that show, which we can't play on the air, called Class, which I want everybody to pay attention for when you go to Chicago, when you go to the show Chicago as well. We're going to talk more about Broadway in Columbus. We're going to talk about Opera Columbus and the arts in Columbus, Columbus being the operative term here. But I want you to listen right now to an incredible wash of music.
Thank you.
That is The Night Bursting into Sunrise. It is from a monumental symphony called the Alpine Symphony. It's music by the German composer Richard Strauss, which you can hear performed tonight and tomorrow on the stage of the Ohio Theater with the Columbus Symphony conducted by Russin Milanov. Also on the program, Respighi's The Pines of Rome. There's also going to be a visual aspect to the performance of the Alpine Symphony. Now, I've been around a long time. I've never heard the Alpine Symphony actually done live, so tonight will be my first time. Here to tell us more is Daniel Walshaw from the Columbus Symphony. First, welcome, and tell us about an Alpine Symphony.
Hi, thank you so much, Chris, for having me here and joining these lovely colleagues. You're not the only person who this is the first time hearing the Alpine Symphony, because this is the first time we have done this as an orchestra in Columbus. So this is our Columbus premiere of one of the most epic tone poems by Richard Strauss.
Why wait?
We had to wait for Rosen.
Well, tell me about what makes this such a challenge. It's about 50 minutes long. Mm-hmm. It is done without a break. It's a program piece, meaning there are pictures depicted in the music, mm-hmm. but it was written to flow. So once he starts, he doesn't get to stop until it's sunset yet again. So tell me about the piece itself and sell me some tickets. Come on.
All right. So tonight, first of all, I have the best job in the world because I get to go to these rehearsals and get chills listening to this music be made. You will see, if you come to the Ohio this weekend, 95 musicians on stage, just packing the stage. We have an organ. We have brass just bursting at the seams.
Are they all over the house as well, the brass?
The brass are – there's some – in this piece are some backstage brass who are going to do little fanfares mimicking alpine sounds that you'd hear. And it's accompanied by a photography – we're calling it a photographic essay by local photographer Stephen Pariser. So on the back of the shell of the theater, you're going to see these amazing images of the alpine mountains in Switzerland and in Germany. And it's going to help tell the story of Richard Strauss's journey up and down an alpine mountain.
Richard Strauss, in fact, looked out his kitchen window and saw alpine mountains. If you visited his home outside Munich, I mean, the setting I don't think has changed since his death in 1949. So he had that kind of... There are two ways to look at this piece. You can look at it as great music and great pictures, and then there's a whole kind of metaphysical thing that you can get into if you really want to. But my impression is just incredible cascades, literally, of sound that Strauss could do very, very well, even more than Mahler or the other kind of big boy composers.
Absolutely. Richard Strauss literally wrote the book on orchestration. He wrote a book about how to... write music for the orchestra, and this program is one of the most colorful programs I've ever heard between the Strauss and the Respighi Pines of Rome. You will hear just the most delicate writing for the orchestra to the biggest, boldest, brassiest percussion writing for the orchestra, and it's just this wonderful wash that will give you chills from beginning to end.
Wash, that's a musical term I also like to use, but you can sit there, and I crashed a couple of rehearsals too, and I got to move around the theater to hear it in kind of, I don't know, eight dimension sound, because it doesn't let up. But mm-hmm. it begins with night. It begins with a very you have to strain a bit to hear it as kind of the world begins. Mm-hmm. It bursts into sunrise at about 5 minutes into it, and then it takes you through waterfalls and thunderstorms and hallucinations at the top of the mountain. And Strauss was in the latter part of his career. This piece is kind of a bridge, because he was leaving off working strictly with the orchestra and going into opera. And it also – he worked on this piece for about 15 years because he was busy climbing the damn mountain to sit down and write the piece. So the Alpine Symphony by Richard Strauss is tonight and tomorrow at 8 in the Ohio Theater. Russin Milanov conducts the Columbus Symphony. What else are you jazzed about in the coming season?
So this program is actually part of one of our two themes for the season, which we're calling Project Nature. And so we have several concerts throughout the season that are devoted to nature themes. So we're doing Beethoven's Pastorale Symphony. Later we're doing Debussy's La Mer. And for each of these programs...
The sea, the ocean.
The ocean, I mean, that's right. Correct, yeah. And so for this first program, we're actually doing something local as well, where we're partnering with a group called Branch Out Columbus. And we are going to be helping to raise money to plant a little Columbus Symphony Grove as part of Branch Out Columbus's 300,000 trees in Columbus by 2020. It's a local city organization
run through the Recreation
and Parks Department. And for each of these concerts, we've actually partnered with different local nature organizations so that we, through our art, can help give back to the community.
And Strauss wrote an opera called Daphne, where she turns into a damn tree at the end of the opera. So I would think that this, Peggy, I mean, let's get on the phone with that one.
That sounds
wonderful, though. That sounds terrific. That's a tangible visual sense of the music you can have after you leave the hall.
Absolutely.
Are you working the Southern Theater this year as well?
We are. And our next concert, which is in October, is going to be in the Southern Theater. And I'm a composer myself, and I'm very excited to have Pulitzer Prize, the youngest Pulitzer Prize winning composer in music, Caroline Shaw, will be coming and playing her own violin concerto. And that's part of our other theme of the season, which is called Focus Creative Women. And we have composers, performers, and even a conductor, all of the kind of top-notch female creative minds in music right now.
This is something I ask everybody who makes decisions about what is performed and what is offered. I'm fascinated with sort of sitting at the blank page and saying, okay, we're going to start in September, and you probably do this 2 or 3 years in advance. We're going to start in September, and we have this many nights and these many theaters, and we want people to come and enjoy it and come back. How do I do that? What is the programming philosophy? How do you decide what music in 500 years of music, speaking of the symphony, gets on stage?
Well, I know that Rosen's primary goal in any programming is it has to sound good together. That step one is you have to create programs that are attractive and make sense together. And then beyond that, if you can create themes and things to stretch throughout the season that tie people in to different concerts, that's an extra bonus. So I'm just incredibly happy with what we've done this season, where every concert is related to one another and just wonderful programming throughout.
The Columbus Symphony is a magnificent community resource. It deserves to be better known than it's quite well known, but I want more people to come tonight and tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the Ohio Theater. When we come back, we're going to talk more about The Turn of the Screw, Benjamin Britten's opera based on Henry James' novella, which in a wonderful way is going to creep people out and keep them coming back. And Lisa Minkin will tell us more about Broadway and Columbus, including we're looking forward to An American in Paris, The King and I, Waitress, Chicago, and The Return of Phantom. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Malo is a naughty boy. That is from Benjamin Britten's opera, The Turn of the Screw, which opens next week at the Southern Theater thanks to Opera Columbus. It is directed by Juilliard professor Stephen Wadsworth and stars two Juilliard graduates. As a graduate herself is Peggy Crea Dye, who is here. Tell us about the turn. That's chilling. Tell us
Isn't
about
it?
The Turn of the Screw.
It is so creepy. It's like movie music to this amazing drama on stage. This is an opera unlike anything we've produced before. We've invested more money in this show than we have in the last 5 years. So the set is really a spectacle. There's so much detail in the costume. And we've had added an extra week of rehearsal so that the six characters that are in the show can really bond, and we can add so much specific drama to this. And then the music is under it, just spooky, creepy.
It's music from 1954, when the British composer Benjamin Britten was at his height. It's the novel by Henry James that made into the movies called The Innocents. Deborah Carr was in the movie. I saw it on the road with Clara Bloom back in the long ago day mm-hmm. as a so it's well known as a story, as a novel, as a film, as a play, and as Britain's opera. And you know, there are grand operas, huge operas like Aida, which you're going to be co-producing mm-hmm. with the Columbus Symphony later in the season. This is not that, but this is a concentrated ghost story.
It is, and I have to say, there's not a part of it that I wish I could have done differently. I really am proud of this show. The singing is just stunning. We're featuring singers from our Juilliard collaboration we brought to town. The voice that you heard, then the voice soprano there, we found, I mean, it's so scary to hopefully find a voice soprano when we decided to do this show.
So he's like 10 or 11 years old, right?
He's 13. So his voice is going to change in five minutes. So we're really excited. So come
hang
see
on. Right. Yeah. That'll be a drag. Yes. Yeah.
No, he's such a beautiful singer. And if you've seen the trailer, that is him. And we brought him from Pittsburgh. He's been having a tutor and schooling during the day, rehearsals at night. I mean, his family commitment is incredible. And we also have Elizabeth Blanquera, and she's an OSU student. And she was also a recipient of the Encouragement Award at the Cooper Bing competition.
The Opera Columbus audition competition, right. So, you know, we all know that opera is nothing but fat people screaming at each other. Okay, that's what it is. So,
always say that every radio show.
Well, because I want it disabused.
No,
so I want you to disabuse
it
because that's your great grandmother's opera. That's not true
anymore.
This
is not anymore. Not at all.
No.
And you can wear what you want. You can have a bourbon. You can keep your phone on. Like it's entertainment. Like you're going to find anywhere. The difference with opera is that everything is heightened. So your experience is so much more heightened than any other art form. Sorry, guys. I totally believe that because opera, you've got the symphony, you've got the sets, you've got the costumes. You have a technique where there's no microphones. These singers are singing without microphones and you can hear them so clearly.
Tell me about the director. Tell me about what this is actually a very strong theatrical piece.
It is.
It's not a play, but I mean, it's almost presented like a play. It's almost like presented like a Broadway in Columbus.
It really is. Yeah.
Evening.
And our director, Stephen Wadsworth, you mentioned he's at Juilliard, which is true, but he's directed on Broadway. Tyne Daly in the Masterclass, and he's worked with Leonard Bernstein.
He's wrote an opera with Leonard Bernstein.
He did. Yes. He did. So Stephen has this amazing history that goes way beyond opera, and that's what he's bringing to this production.
I told you off mic that I knew him 100 years ago, but he's young now. So when he was doing all that stuff with Bernstein, he was very young.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got so much experience. It's ridiculous.
The Turn of the Screw is next week. It's a week from tonight, right?
It's a week from tonight at 7:30 in the Southern Theater. And then we also have a show 2 o'clock Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. And bring your friends because this is going. This is also, if you really are somebody who has always been curious about going to the opera, but it's not for me, it's in a foreign language, mm-hmm. everybody's in a toga, wrong, right?
Right. It's in English.
It's in English.
It's in English. You're going to understand everything. And it's a play and it's relatable. Some of these characters, what they're going through and the trauma and the drama that they experience. It's a really good first opera.
It's a great first opera, and it's also you can decide really what's happening because the composer and the story they're not emphatic about insisting it has to be this way.
Right. It's kind of reminds me of like Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Exactly,
you know?
Right.
Kind of a dark, creepy, interesting, intriguing story.
Daniel and Peggy, Columbus Symphony Opera, Columbus. How you're doing Aida? I think in February.
Yeah,
in the Ohio Theater. That is the largest of all operas. It's huge chorus,
it's huge
orchestra,
and we've added.
Right, you would, yeah. great. Recognizable music, marches, slave mm-hmm. dancing girls, slaves, soldiers. How's the collaboration working out?
We like each other, so it's going pretty good. When you say Daniel?
There's been no fights yet. No, it's been wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And it's going to be a stunning weekend. The singers that Peggy has selected are amazing. We got the zoo on board.
The Columbus Zoo will be marching across
the stage. Are they bringing elephants?
We find out at the last minute. No elephants. However, there will be camels, possibly horses. Brawson
they're going to come down the aisle.
A horse, we so can, I'm looking for
we
that.
Could ride some of them, you know. And
you can ride.
We can
some
get
of them.
The OSU. One year they did get the OSU football team to march.
Really?
With their shirts off, which kind of sold a lot
Lovely.
Of tickets. Well, I'm just saying.
Sounds
I mean, I'm talking,
nice.
I'm thinking
Sounds
as
like
a marketer.
You should be a producer.
Thinking as a marketer here, you know.
But we do have OSU.
Yes.
So we have a bunch of their brass showing up, and they'll be playing right next to you. So it's going to be pretty
exciting.
They'll
probably play special. There's a lot of trumpets and a lot of brass in AIDA.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great sound.
Big triumphal march.
It is epic.
Really, I mean, you'll hear it. You'll hear it. You should beam that on the comments and the big on the big screen, AIDA. That would be.
We really should.
You really should. You know,
talk to Rossin about that.
Yeah, talk to me about that. I mean, come on. Anyway,
it's going to be February.
You're on. You put
it's
a coat on.
Huge
give me a
chorus.
Break.
How many people in that chorus?
You put a coat on. You sell hot. You sell hot chocolate and hot toddies outside. You make a little money.
There we go.
Speaking of making money, Lisa Minkin, Broadway and Columbus. Let's come back to Broadway and Columbus. The King and I, an American in Paris. Tell me about American in Paris.
Yeah, a beautiful piece. It won several Tony Awards. It was directed and choreographed by Christopher Wheeldon,
yes,
who Columbus
of course.
Audiences
know
may
him.
Be familiar with, as he frequently does guest choreography for Ballet Met. Mm-hmm. And it's all the music of George and Ira Gershwin. So I Got Rhythm, who could, you know, all those great tunes that everyone knows and likes to hum along to are in that show.
One thing I love about when I go to some of your shows and I sit in the Ohio Theater, people sometimes sing along.
They do.
It's like being at the opera in Italy. You know, people sing along, which I think is great.
I think it's great that they love the music that much. I think sometimes maybe the people sitting next to them don't love it quite as much.
Well, then learn the words. Get into it because it's fun to do. So School of Rock, Waitress, I'm not quite familiar with that. I do know it's a hot ticket. Mm-hmm. Chicago's been around and it's always fun. And you've got Eddie George in Chicago.
Exactly.
And The King and I. Now, you saw that production. I couldn't get tickets to it. This was the revival done at Lincoln Center last year.
Yes, directed by Bartlett Shear. And it is amazing. And I do want to say, when I went in and knew that it was 3 hours long, I was not super excited about it. But about 5 minutes in, I was sold. I was on the edge of my seat. And the production was lovely and grand. And even though I knew how it ended, I didn't want the king to die.
No. Yeah. And that's, you know, Richard Rodgers and Hammerstein knew how to write tunes. There's a reason that 70 years later these shows are still done. They're like Puccini, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the
yes.
same. It's the same
Agreed.
Deal. We're talking about the arts in Columbus. We're going to be welcoming Chad Whittington to the program shortly. Chad Whittington has told me that he's been with CAPA, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, since he was 19. But last week, he was named the president and chief executive officer at CAPA. He will be coming in a few minutes, and he will tell us more about the goings-on. And he probably is outside listening to all of you and writing down everything you say and taking names and things
we
like that.
Chad.
So,
we
love Chad. Yes, we want to... I want people to really share my own, and I think a lot of people's enthusiasm for being downtown of a Friday or even a Thursday night and Wednesday night sometimes. There's a lot going on in all of the theaters that CAPA runs. We also have, not forgetting, Magnificent Ballet with Ballet Met. Mm-hmm. We have the Columbus Dance Theater. We have ProMusica, the Chamber mm-hmm. Orchestra. OSU does great things as well. Peggy, you have a collaboration with OSU, don't you, with Opera
we
Columbus?
We do. Yeah, we have a partnership with them. Students there can sign up for Opera Columbus class, get credit, and even a stipend. And we cast them in our educational tour. We do over 50 performances, and we reach over 12,000 kids in two chamber operas that we tour. And we also get those OSU students on stage with us in the chorus and try to get them downtown and involved in what we're doing.
You have the Turn of the Screw next week. You're collaborating with the Columbus Symphony doing AIDA, which is the mm-hmm. biggest and grandest of all mm-hmm. operas. And you also are doing something a little bit unusual in a way. You're doing a wonderful older opera, Orpheus by Gluck.
Yes.
Orphée.
Yes.
But
okay, so we're taking a huge risk. We spent a week in Banff to build this show, where we'll have three workshops before we actually come to Columbus and do this show. It's three characters, simple story, Greek mythology. However, we're bringing in a ballet company from New York, Company XIV, and they do burlesque ballet.
Now, when you say burlesque, let's go back.
I mean
a little.
Burlesque.
Okay.
Actually, it's very tasteful. I think of burlesque. It's elegant. It's tasteful. But
I don't want it to be tasteful if you're going to do burlesque. I mean,
I was
going to
say sexy, but you interrupted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's going to be because, you know, Orpheus goes down to the underworld to rescue her and
his wife.
Yes, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of you know. Hell is an interesting place, evidently, in this opera. But then we also have this chorus. It's a virtual chorus. We are sending out a video via YouTube around the world, and people will participate, and we will project the chorus onto the set. So it's really infused with technology. We have the Columbus Symphony for that, but we also have an electric guitar in the pit. And a keyboard. And it is, if Gluck were alive today, he would be grabbing at all of these things.
Probably, yes.
So
yes.
It is a modern take that an audience that is very techno savvy will be able to relate to.
Right. And your audience tends to be that way, right?
Yes.
I see a lot of date nights when I go to opera. I mean, I tend to be the oldest person in the theater when I go to opera. It's true. I mean,
we are getting a much younger audience as we try different things and take risks and try to get the word out that you don't have to wear a gown, that you don't have to know anything before you get to the theater. Just let us entertain you.
You have a career as a singer. You've had a career as a singer for a number of years. You have had music written for you by people like Jake Hedgie, who is a fine composer, who I suspect we'll hear more about. I'm not going to say anything right now. But you told me that you are kind of phasing out your performing career because, A, you're busy. Two, you also have two kids, etc. So,
yes. So I'm doing my little swan opera song. I leave on Sunday and start flying back and forth for rehearsals. I'm doing The Marriage of Figaro. I'm singing The Countess.
In Toronto?
I am.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's that.
It's sad that you won't bring it here, though. You've brought a couple of things here, but you're not going to bring that.
You never know.
Well, you never say never. No prima donna actually makes an ultimate farewell unless the plane goes down, so, which God forbid,
good
right?
Night.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for saying that, Christopher.
I want to remind everybody about the Columbus Symphony tonight and tomorrow at 8 in the Ohio Theater. Richard Strauss's Alpine Symphony, which has 95 instrumental, because that's the max that will fit on the stage. I think it's scored for 135, but we also have people backstage and a lot else going on. It will have a visual component as well. Also, Respighi's Pines of Rome. That is something that people know they know, even if they don't know they know it. They've heard that before. It comes from 1924. It is a different kind of travelogue. It is music about the eternal city and the great pine trees and children playing and fountains going and everything else. So did you deliberately choose a pictorial program for your season openers?
Absolutely. And then just a little plug about the Pines of Rome. We have six brass players from the OSU School of Music who are going to be performing these wonderful kind of offstage Puccini parts to add this amazing enhancement to the ending of Pines of Rome. It's going to shake the theater.
Very early in my career, I was mentored by a man named Richard Moore, who produced most of Toscanini's recordings, including his recording of the Pines of Rome. And he told me a story that when Toscanini was about 90, stereo came in. So they were doing all kinds of things that the old gentleman hadn't known before, and they sat him down at the console to give him the playback, and he kept yelling louder, 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 and they said, "Maestro, if we play it louder, we will break the machinery." And he said, "Then break the machinery." So I'd like you to hear that right now, Toscanini's Pines of Rome. That is also music you can hear tonight and tomorrow on the stage of the Ohio Theater with the Columbus Symphony, conducted by Russin Milanov, Respighi's The Pines of Rome, and the Alpine Symphony by Richard Strauss. And that is just the beginning of the classical series at the Columbus Symphony. There will be two Russian festivals, music of Shostakovich, Tchaikovsky, Mussorgsky, and a phenomenal pianist who came last year, Natasha, I'm going to say that wrong. You can say it for me.
Paremsky,
who blew the roof off the place, and she is coming back as well.
And Joshua Bell.
Joshua Bell.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Do not pass up the opportunity to be part of the excitement with the Columbus Symphony. And then you're going to go see Turn of the Screw at the Southern Theater, music by Benjamin Britten, and be wonderfully creeped out and have a bourbon while you sit there.
That's right.
While you tweet live. Don't be like our president, but just tweet live nice things about how wonderful the production is. And then you come back and do Orpheus. You're doing Aida. Mm-hmm. And School of Rock, Lisa Minkin. Let's get people in to play instruments.
Yeah, exactly. Come see these insanely talented kids just rock out on the stage of the Ohio Theater.
That's Broadway in Columbus in the Ohio Theater. We have Waitress, Chicago with Eddie George, mm-hmm. The King and I, An American in Paris, The School of Mormon, and Phantom of the Opera. And I'm going to sing us out right now with music from Phantom of the Opera as I thank Daniel Walshaw, Lisa Minkin, and my opera girlfriend Peggy Criadi mm-hmm. for joining me today. Chad Whittington will be here in just a moment. Don't go away.
Turn your face away from the garish light of day. Turn your thoughts away from cold unfeeling light. And listen to the music of the night. Close your eyes and surrender to your dark.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich, our producer. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy, and it is my pleasure to welcome Chad Whittington to the program. Chad Whittington, a couple of weeks ago, was interim president and CEO of Kappa. Never mind interim. We've got rid of that word. He is the president and CEO of Kappa, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. And you told me that your first Kappa job was being a janitor.
Thank you, Christopher. I'm glad to be here today. And that's true. I started my career at Kappa cleaning the Ohio Theater and working the security desk there at shows. So I didn't know I'd be here sitting where I am 20 years later, but it's been a great experience. Kappa is a great organization, and working in the arts it's just hard to describe how fulfilling it is.
Don't be afraid to start modestly, because you'll end up being the boss. This has just happened to my guest here today. So you have a lot of institutional memory. So what was Kappa then, and what is it now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Really back then, Kappa was running the theaters and doing great programming, two things that we still do, and we had started the shared services model in a different way. We were in other cities. We were in Chicago at the time, and from that came the shared services model we have now, where it's local organizations as well. So we had already the seeds of many of the things that we're doing today were just starting when I joined Kappa, and so it's been fantastic over 20 years to see how those seeds have grown into the shared services model that we have and some of the touring that we've done around the country.
Now, I also, Kappa was for a little while also New Haven as well.
We
still are. Okay. Yeah. The Schubert Theater in New Haven.
That's correct. Yep. Schubert Theater, where many, going back to what you guys were talking about earlier, many of the Roger and Hammerstein
that began
shows.
That was the great tryout theater
right.
as well for Broadway. A lot of people, you know, they go to performances, and maybe Kappa will be the name on their ticket or something as they go in, but they don't know much more than that, except that they're going to hear a symphony or a Broadway show or an opera, but they're not really cognizant of what Kappa does. I know you operate the Southern Theater, the Palace, the Ohio Theater, the Rife Center, et cetera. So you are in charge of all the presentations downtown, but what else goes on with that?
Yeah, we manage those buildings. We've got a long history of doing that, and we're very proud of the way that we're able to maintain those theaters so that all the resident groups and others as well can come in and put on their great art. We also present a lot of the shows that you see that are national acts that come in, or even international sometimes, Plowing the Stars from the Abbey Theater last year, for example. Kappa is presenting those, so we're taking the risk on those and saying these things are important to our community. We're not trying to compete with the resident arts groups, because we create great art here in Columbus, but we're trying to bring and other things, and to round out what takes place in our theaters. And, you know, that's a very important piece of what we do, along with the shared services that I mentioned, where we provide administrative support to resident groups such as the opera and the symphony, so that they can focus on the artistic piece of their mission.
Explain also just what you've said shared services a couple of times. Just fill us in about really what that means and who's sharing.
Sure. So that means, again, using as an example Opera Columbus or the symphony, we are sharing administrative support, so marketing staff and the accounting staff. Rather than each of us keeping our own staffs, we pull those things together, those responsibilities. We hire one staff, and they handle multiple companies. And that really accomplishes two things. It saves some money for all of us, and it allows us to keep really good people because, you know, we can pay them a little bit more and provide levels of expertise because we've now got three accountants working in the arts rather than one working at three
separate
companies.
That was you for a while. You were the one guy, weren't you, for a while there?
That's where I started. That's right. So it allows us to bring in really quality folks to work on the administrative side of the arts to complement what we've got on the artistic side.
Now, you follow two very high-profile impresarios, Doug Kreidler, who ran Kappa for many years, and he was behind the renovation of the Ohio Theater. This is before my time in Columbus, but it was my understanding the Ohio Theater was threatened with a wrecking ball at one point, almost, and that was put a stop to, and that became a real destination. And then the Southern Theater also was brought back to life from being almost condemned, and now it's one of the most beautiful theaters I've ever seen. And then Bill Connor came along, may he rest in peace as well, and left his mark here for a number of years. Now it's your turn, and I want to know I know what Bill's Kappa was, and I know what Doug's was. What's Chad's going to be?
And so Kappa has a great history of being a leader in the arts and working with other groups to really raise the arts profile in Columbus, and that's what we're going to continue to do. I think an area where we're going to see increased attention in the future is on education. I think the basis of everything we do is making people aware of what goes on in Columbus, and not just what we do with the resident groups does, the arts all over, arts and culture all over Columbus. So expanding our presence in education, working with the resident groups. We've got great education programs in our resident groups.
You mean like Opera Columbus?
Opera Columbus goes to school program, the symphony programs, some of the work that CATCO does in schools and in their camps. Just amazing things that reach out and touch the lives of the kids in our neighborhoods. We want to be a part of that more than we are now. And again, I think it's reaching out, making contact with groups out in the communities ourselves, working with the City of Columbus, working with Columbus Public Schools, but it's also working with the residents and saying, you've got these great programs. How can we help you do more with them?
Have you been able to, I know it's been a short time, identify some specific needs that might be new to you that you think maybe we could do this and we haven't done it before?
Sure. I think that's where the education comes in. There's always more need to work with the school systems. I mentioned Columbus Public Schools, but certainly other school systems as well. There's need in the schools to provide funds for students to get into the theaters, but to do arts programming in the schools as well. We've got resident groups that do a great job, but there's more demand than there is supply right now in terms of, just funds for education. So we want to help fill some of that gap by providing programming. So take the artists that are coming to Columbus, we're presenting here in Columbus, and taking them out into the schools for master classes or performances in the school districts.
I want to do a little rundown of some of the theaters that Kappa maintains, because I think it's important. They're all different. They're all beautiful. They're all in great use. But, for example, the Palace Theater, what goes on at the Palace Theater over on Broad Street?
We call the Palace the workhorse of Columbus because it really it provides a home for a diverse range of different performances. Comedians, we've had Jerry Seinfeld over there, Chris Rock. The gospel shows take place over there. We've had some Latino bands that have performed over there. So it's really a little bit of everything. It's a lot of the rental shows and a lot of Kappa single night presents that take place at the Palace. So, it was busy about 40 weeks last year doing those kind of one-night shows. So I love that theater just because of the diversity of the programming that we're able to do over there.
Has a great upstairs too. It does. It's like being in a Roman arena. It's beautiful up there. Yeah. The Ohio Theater might be the most familiar to most people because it gets the symphonies there a lot, and it's most familiar to me. Was it a movie palace initially?
It was built in 1928. It was built as
Lowe's.
Lowe's movie house. But they had the foresight to go ahead and build a very large backstage and, understanding that live performance would take place there at times. And so, it's a great home for the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, for Ballet Met, and for a lot of the Broadway series shows as well. And those three really, you know, they take a lot of weeks out of the Ohio, which is why the Palace is available to take on, you know, a lot of the other shows that, that come along.
Because you do need a venue that will be available for one-nighters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, I mean, Jerry Seinfeld doesn't need to do a week anywhere. I mean, he, you know, one night's fine, I would think. But,
right,
yeah.
Right. Same with the gospel shows and, you know, most of those sorts of events, even if it's more than one show, it's just a weekend, for example. But it's important to have those shows. It's important to have the Palace because we need to have those shows in Columbus. So those the two theaters, the Ohio and the Palace, complement each other very well.
My own experience going into the Capitol Theater, now the Reif Center, and I think it's the Davidson Theater, is that right?
That's correct.
Named for Joanne Davidson.
Joanne Davidson.
Yes, has been as a venue for dance, which I thought was great. I mean, because the sight lines are wonderful there. But talk about the Reif Center as well. And CATCO is there. There are three theaters upstairs for the theater.
That's right. So the Davidson Theater sits about 900, and then we've got studios, which are smaller spaces upstairs in the Reif Building. And that's where CATCO does a lot of their productions. Small theater companies are able to use those spaces because they're very affordable. So a lot of fledgling, you know, startups are able to afford that space and yet have a professional space to do their performances. In the Capitol itself, it is a great space for dance. Ballymet uses it at times. And dance competitions love it, too. We do a lot of those over there. So.
Now, I remember when I first came to Columbus about, I think it was 1990 when I moved here. It was the Great Southern Hotel, but nobody knew there was a theater in the Great Southern Hotel back then. I mean, I guess some people knew, but it wasn't in use. And literally, they were breaking walls down and finding, you know, gorgeous things that had been covered up for 40 or 50 years. And that renovation made national news. It was a mm-hmm. big deal. It went on for a long time, and architects were coming in here, and the results are absolutely stunning. You probably were in your early days there as that renovation was happening, was starting to go, and I'm sure it took a lot of the organization's time. Can you talk about really reintroducing such a beautiful space?
I came in on the tail end of that. It was 99 when it reopened, and I joined CAP in 98. So, yeah, it's amazing to me. You walk in there now, and it's so beautiful, it almost takes your breath away. And to think that it was in this complete disrepair and you know, had the potential just to sit there and not be productive and versus what it is today, it's absolutely amazing, like the other theaters are. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is really important about what CAPA does. We're about the arts, but we're also about maintaining these historical buildings that are so beautiful and could never be created. If you go into those and look at the detail in the artwork and, you know, the gold leaf and those sorts of things that just aren't possible to build these days.
The acoustics.
That's right.
You can't really build with what we have with the material today. You can't really reinvent acoustics that well either for non-mic'd music, for, you know, really acoustic sound as well. There is a beautiful church, catty corner to the Ohio Theater on 3rd, and there has been some talk about that being renovated for a chamber music venue. Is that on the table still? Is that an idea that's on the burner?
It is. CAPA still owns that building, and certainly when you look at the schedules in our theaters, they're very full. So even if it's not today, the time's coming. We're going to need more space in Columbus, and we can be patient like we were with the Southern Theater. The Southern Theater, CAPA owned it for over 10 years before the renovation finally took place on that building. So, you know, we want to make sure we have the right story, we have the need before we open up a venue, and we need to be able to tell the community that, and you know, so they're going to support it. But we can be patient right now and see what comes of it. But yeah, a small recital hall that church would be perfect for
it's,
that.
It's worth waiting for. It's worth doing right. It's worth
Absolutely.
Getting it. It's worth getting it right. Now, the philanthropist Ann Melvin, may she rest in peace, was a very big part of CAPA's success and a very generous person. And it was her. Hope that someday there would be a sort of a 1,500-seat concert hall, because a lot of the 3,000-seat theaters were built for the cinema when the cinema was new in the 1920s, and they weren't really intended for symphony audiences. So sometimes you have these huge theaters that are half full, whereas if they were in Sephrance Hall in Cleveland, which was built for the Cleveland Orchestra, they would have been sold out three mm-hmm. or four times over. So they would have been packed houses. Do you see a need for a 1,500-seat new concert hall that might be part of the Scioto Mile or some part of the riverfront real estate? Do you see that need? Is that has been bandied about, that has been talked about, it was a hope of hers. Is that something that might be in Columbus's future, or do we have it really good with what we got?
I think that's a great way to put it. It might be in Columbus's future. I don't think we should rule that out. One of the great things about being in Columbus is there's a lot of population growth projected in front of us. So I don't think we should look at ourselves and say what we've got now is always going to be the solution for Columbus. We need to be thinking about, is another concert hall the right solution? If not today, 10 years from now, and be open to that. And certainly I'm open to that. And again, we're at the point now where our schedules are very full in our theaters. So as we continue to grow in the community and our arts and culture section continues to grow, those are ideas we need to consider.
You have good problems to have. I mean, you can really pick and choose what you present because everybody wants to come to Columbus. I mean, touring organizations. I used to book tours back in the 80s, and this was a prime market because it was between Chicago and everywhere else, and everybody wanted to be in a really fine – it was a good population. So I'm sure everybody still, even more than 30 years ago, wants to come to Columbus.
Yeah, it's amazing being here 20 years now, seeing how we've changed as a community and even our perception of ourselves. It's been really exciting to watch. So the arts needs to change with that, and that's what we're trying to do. We have great arts here in Columbus, and we've got a lot of it. It doesn't matter. Anybody out there listening right now, there's something in Columbus for you in the arts scene, and that's only going to increase. We want to raise the arts profile of Columbus. We want this to be known as one of the best arts cities in the U.S., and that's what we work for every day.
You and your colleagues are doing that. Chad Whittington is the new president and chief executive officer at CAPA, the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. He's taking time out of a devastatingly busy schedule to visit with us today, and I appreciate that very much. In the few minutes we have left, I'd like to know more about, let's get personal. I'd like to know more about Chad Whittington and your background and what you love to do and what you want to bring to this job.
Okay. Well, if I could start just by mentioning my family. I got a wonderful wife, Melinda, and a 7-year-old daughter, Violet, and I couldn't do this without them, so I just want to recognize them. Yeah, I've been at CAPA my entire career, so the arts has been such an important part of my life over the last 20 years. It's just ingrained in me. There are other things I like to do, though. I've got my private pilot's license.
Do you really?
I do. Don't have much time anymore to do that. I'm pretty busy, but once in a while.
Thinking like a marketer here. Flying over Columbus. That's great. I like that.
So, yeah, I like to do that once in a while if I can. It's a really interesting perspective on the world, being just not 30,000 feet off the ground, but 5,000 feet off the ground. So, yeah, that's relaxing for me. I love to ride my bike. It's a bicycle. Helps me keep in shape a little bit. And we've got about 12 acres out in Pickerington, and just love to spend time around there with my family.
Well, you may be spending less of it right now, but I hope it's going to be wonderful for you. I said earlier that Doug Kreidler's CAPA was magnificent, and so was Bill Connor's. And I have I know that Chad Whittington's CAPA is going to be wonderful as well. You have great people working with you. You have wonderful real estate, great theaters. We just had earlier in the program three of your colleagues coming in who are behind you making decisions about what is being performed, and there's not a loser among them. So I'm as somebody who is also a patron and a ticket buyer, I very much appreciate what you all do, and I'm delighted that you came to spend some time with me today. Chad Whittington, the new president and CEO of CAPA, say hello to him if you see him at performances with the Ohio Theater tonight, the Columbus Symphony, and tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Opera Columbus, next week with the Turn of the Screw at the Southern and Broadway in Columbus. I'm Christopher Purdy. That is today's edition of All Sides Weekend, the Arts. My thanks to producer Amy Jurevich and to all of you for listening.